Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1998. Check your blankets and candles.
Hello. I was hoping that I'd have enough new information on the Middle East situation before this broadcast to make a forecast, but I don't. I do see the displeasure of the Jewish policymakers in the Clinton government with the agreement between Iraq and the UN, which has temporarily stymied their war plans. It's clear that Madeleine Albright, for example, hates the new agreement and would much prefer to be bombing Iraqis now instead of later. And I see that the Republican politicians, in an effort to please the Jewish media bosses and money men, are rattling their sabers even louder than the Democrats. Mississippi's Republican Senator Trent Lott is a good example of that. He's a man with presidential ambitions, and I'm sure that he's not issuing his calls to ignore the UN agreement and launch an all-out war against Iraq without having consulted with his Jewish advisors and financial backers first. So my guess is that the war against Iraq has been delayed for only a few months at the most, perhaps for only a few weeks. And the same people that almost got the war started last week still intend to have their war. They are determined to cripple Iraq by one means or another. But beyond that, I just don't know enough at this time to make any predictions. I suspect, though, that the new agreement between the UN and Iraq will not be good for Bill Clinton. Getting the war started soon was his one hope of keeping the Bill and Monica story out of the headlines for a while, but he let his chance slip. Now the people who are hot for a war have one more reason to be unhappy with Clinton, and they now have time to write Clinton off and groom Al Gore to be their new warlord. I've been turning this whole business of Bill Clinton and his problems over in my mind, trying to get the best perspective on it. As I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, when I was in Germany recently, the Germans couldn't believe what they were seeing in the news about Clinton. It just didn't seem possible to them that the head of the most powerful country on earth could be such an irresponsible clown, such a degenerate, such a reckless criminal. I explained to them that that's democracy in America. But I must admit that I'm having a little trouble myself accepting the Clinton situation as real. It seems more like some sort of bad dream. I mean, I can understand even a very successful and powerful politician having a personal quirk or two. I wouldn't be surprised if an investigation of the 100 top politicians and bureaucrats in Washington found that a number of them have a weakness for bimbos, or occasionally indulge themselves with cocaine, or have sticky fingers in financial matters. And of course, they all lie on a daily basis. Politics in a democracy does not attract people of sterling character. But in Bill Clinton, all of these vices are combined and exaggerated to the point of grotesqueness, of freakishness. A couple of weeks ago, on February 12th, the Wall Street Journal had a full-page spread which summarized some of Clinton's quirks in a graphic way. Considered altogether, it's rather breathtaking. Take the Whitewater scandal, for example, which most Americans probably are tired of hearing about. One of the principals in that scandal, Susan McDougal, an officer of the bankrupt Madison Guaranty Savings and Loan, has been sitting in prison in Arkansas for the last 6 months because even after being given a grant of immunity from prosecution, she still refuses to tell a grand jury whether or not Clinton was involved in the illegal activity of Madison Guarantee, and also whether or not Clinton lied under oath when he testified at her trial on bank fraud charges. Now, Susan McDougal isn't sitting in prison because she likes to be there. All she has to do to get out and also to remain in favor with her good friend Bill Clinton is tell the grand jury that Clinton wasn't involved in or aware of criminal activity at Madison Guarantee and that he testified truthfully at her trial. So why doesn't she just tell the world that Clinton is innocent so she can get out of prison? We can only assume that it's because he's not innocent and she's afraid to perjure herself and somebody is making it worth her while to keep her mouth shut and remain in prison on the contempt charge. And of course, we can understand her fear of being caught in perjury. Things are turning up all the time which indicate that Clinton was, in fact, involved with Madison Guarantee and that he lied when he testified at her trial. One of those things is a cashed check for $27,000 from Madison Guarantee to Clinton, which recently was found in a box of old bank records that everybody thought had been destroyed. There are many very strong reasons for thinking Clinton committed criminal acts in the Madison Guarantee affair, and Susan McDougal's willingness to sit in prison on a contempt charge rather than tell what she knows about him is only one of those reasons. In more normal times, this McDougal affair alone would have been enough to bring a president down, even without formal charges being filed against him. And the only reason formal charges haven't been filed is because evidence disappears, or witnesses disappear, or witnesses take the Fifth Amendment, or they let themselves be jailed for contempt rather than testify. There's a lot of money involved in keeping Bill Clinton in the White House, and when there are a lot of crooked lawyers and a lot of money involved in a case, it becomes hard to pin things down. And that's the pattern we see in a whole array of scandals in which Clinton is involved. Hints of perjury, witnesses who refuse to testify, all sorts of indications of wrongdoing, but just not quite enough for a guaranteed conviction if he's indicted. But also, none of the scandals ever gets cleared up. Clinton manages to wriggle out of one after another, barely, but they just keep accumulating, and the evidence of his crookedness just keeps piling up. Back in 1992, he went on television and told Americans that he hadn't had a sexual relationship with Jennifer Flowers while he was the governor of Arkansas. In a deposition he was forced to give in the Paula Jones case a few weeks ago, he admitted under oath that he did have a sexual relationship with Jennifer. And of course, there's much more to the Jennifer Flowers affair than Clinton's uncontrollable zipper. There was his illegal use of Arkansas state troopers to facilitate his rendezvous with Jennifer, and his payoff to her with a state job, which resulted in a job discrimination suit by the state employee who got bumped to make way for Jennifer. And there is solid evidence that Clinton did with Jennifer what he denies doing with Monica, namely, suborning perjury. There's a taped telephone conversation in which Clinton tells Jennifer to lie about their relationship, to deny everything. Hillary and her Jewish spin doctors in the White House are blaming all of the bad publicity about Clinton on a vast right-wing conspiracy. The right-wingers are out to get Clinton and destroy his presidency, Hillary says, because they don't like his progressive policies. But you know, Clinton has been involved in the same sort of recklessly crooked behavior and the consequent scandals throughout his adult life, from the time he was dodging the draft and organizing demonstrations for the Viet Cong back in the 1960s. 10 years ago, when he was the governor of Arkansas, he gave a state pardon to his biggest Arkansas supporter, Dan Lassiter, after Lassiter was convicted of dealing in cocaine. That sort of thing really looked bad back then, just as it looks bad today. And one can only suspect payoffs and a lot of other dirty things that haven't come to light yet. 10 years ago, of course, Clinton's boosters in the media were doing a much better job of protecting him and covering up his quirks. Since the Monica Lewinsky scandal came to light a few weeks ago, they seem to have given up on him. They've decided to cut their losses. Clinton is just too much of a tar baby. To quote Jennifer Flowers when she heard about Clinton's latest problems, "You'd think the boy would learn." But Clinton is a true child of the 1960s. When he was growing up, he learned not only that the world owed him a living, but that he was entitled to have whatever he wanted to have. He learned that if it feels good, he should do it. He learned contempt for such concepts as responsibility, duty, honor, and patriotism. He learned that the most valuable skill one can have is to be able to lie convincingly. He learned that he had a real talent for lying, and he could lie himself out of any problem. But, as Jennifer has suggested, he doesn't seem to have learned anything since then. You know, I can even cope with the fact that we have a constitutional psychopath for a president. A lot of morally crippled people grew up during the 1960s. A lot of people took their lead from the Jews back then and have continued to follow that lead. What bothers me a lot more than the fact that Clinton is a moral cripple is his acceptance by a substantial portion of the American public. Not just acceptance, but approval. That says a lot about what's wrong with America, not just what's wrong with Clinton. It's not just the welfare class and the feminists and the rest of the Clinton coalition that deserves the contempt of every true patriot for continuing to associate themselves with Clinton. It's everyone in Washington who still addresses him as Mr. President instead of spitting in his face, or at least turning away from him and simply refusing to recognize him. Do these bureaucrats and lawyers and politicians who still show respect to Clinton, who still shake his hand and smile at him and treat him as if he deserved respect, do they understand what they're doing to undermine respect for themselves and for the institutions they represent? Do they understand what they're doing to undermine respect for the government itself and for the democratic process? No American patriot should tolerate Bill Clinton remaining in the White House. No American patriot should tolerate the government of which Bill Clinton is the head. No American patriot should tolerate the system which put Bill Clinton at the head of the U.S. government. You know, if I had said that a year ago, most people would simply have dismissed me as an extremist, and I suppose that many still would. But every real patriot now must either agree with me or at least be made very uncomfortable by what I have said. And I am defining as a real patriot everyone who really cares whether or not the president is a constitutional psychopath, who is really distressed by having such a man as president, and who also is responsible enough to be familiar with the facts, responsible enough to pay attention to what is happening, responsible enough to learn what he needs to learn in order to make informed decisions as a citizen. So either you agree with me or you're on the way to agreeing with me. If you're a patriot, you cannot simply ignore what's happening and go on about your personal business. You cannot dismiss what I've said and keep pretending that we don't have a grave national problem that requires a grave remedy. Now do you understand why the spokesmen for the controlled media have such fear and loathing in their voices whenever they utter the word patriot? By supporting and covering for Clinton for so long, they have gotten themselves into an exposed position, a position in which every patriot must consider them as much enemies of America as is Clinton himself. I think that they've decided to cut their losses by letting Clinton go, but it may be too late for them. Think about it. Did ancient Rome ever have a more degenerate or criminal government than the one we have now? An even more disturbing question. Did Rome ever have a more irresponsible or debased citizenry than we have in America today? You know, it's clear what patriots ought to do about Bill Clinton and his government and the system which gave us Clinton and his government. They won't do quite yet what they ought to do for several reasons. First, as I noted, many of them are still only on the way to accepting their responsibility as patriots. Like the Germans, they still can't quite believe that the Clinton situation is real. And second, there still would be a lot of opposition to doing what we ought to do. Opposition not just from the rabble who don't care that Clinton is a criminal and a degenerate and who approve of him because they like his progressive programs, but also opposition from a fairly large segment of the population which is not quite rabble and not quite patriot. A segment which likes to think of itself as moral and respectable and even responsible, but which is too conservative, too authoritarian, too inflexible in its thinking to accept a direct attack on the government and on the system underlying the government. A great many police and military personnel belong to this segment. These people have a very strong streak of authoritarianism, a very strong tendency to believe whatever they hear on television. They don't question what they hear. Tell them, this is the President of the United States and you must follow his orders. And they will salute, say, yes, sir, and follow orders. They don't pay attention to all of those stories about perjury and demonstrating for the Viet Cong and sending out state troopers to round up bimbos. They don't pay much attention to anything except the ball games, really. They like to wear uniforms and to salute and to say, yes, sir. So they'll oppose any effort by patriots to do what ought to be done up to a point. And that point is when the television no longer tells them that Bill Clinton is the boss and that they should salute him. That point is when they see the people around Clinton turning away from him, and they no longer can be sure about where the authority lies. And you know, we're closer to that point than we've ever before been in this country. It's a fascinating situation. The Jews chose Bill Clinton as their tool, and very late in the game they have realized that he is such a badly flawed tool that he has jeopardized their whole enterprise. How will they correct their mistake? If they just hang on to him and continue covering for him, their exposure continues to increase. The likelihood of a revolution or at least an assassination and a great deal of civil disorder grows the longer Clinton stays in office. They don't want to be pulled down with Clinton. If they ditch him and switch to Al Gore, on the other hand, the system suffers a substantial shock, a substantial loss in prestige, with many of the authoritarian types on whom the system depends for its unquestioning support becoming badly disoriented. It's clear that some of the media bosses have made the decision to ditch Clinton, but there's still some hesitation. Some Jewish elements are still supporting him. Actually, this is an ideal situation for patriots. Clinton's departure promises to be messy. The authoritarians will have time to become thoroughly confused. The rabble will have time to become angry about the vast right-wing conspiracy destroying their hero. And the patriots who are still on the way will have time to decide what they ought to do. It's really too bad that a revolution in the United States cannot be the clean and relatively bloodless affair that it is in a banana republic, where all a general has to do is surround the presidential palace with his troops and seize the national television station. If he can hold on to the television station for a few days, he's won. It'll be infinitely messier and bloodier in the United States. And it won't be a revolution just against a corrupt president or bad policies. It'll be much more fundamental than that. It'll be a revolution against a failed system of government. Well, I'm sorry that I haven't been able to give you a very specific forecast today. Let me tell you something to be on the lookout for, though. Watch for resignations by top bureaucrats in Washington. They will know what's coming before the rest of us do, and a lot of them will be jumping ship, hoping to avoid being sucked down in the undertow. When you see that happening, you may want to consider tying up your own loose personal ends. Make sure that you have a good stock of blankets and candles and canned goods and ammunition. If you live in a large city, you may want to think about a vacation in a safer area for a month or two. I really don't know what's coming or when it's coming, but I do know that we have a very unusual and dangerous situation in this country now. One way or another, the bizarre and unnatural experiment of government by Jewish media bosses is coming to an end. Thanks for being with me again today.